So, a great pleasure. Gianni Rossi and Jörg Zinken from MPI Nijmegen and University of Portsmouth. Off you go, gents.
Thanks very much, Charles. Today we've heard, all of the talks we've heard today were about some kind of institutional interaction, and I should flag the fact that here we are analyzing everyday informal interaction between intimates and households. The domain we're looking at is that of enlisting other people to practical action, which is also commonly referred to by terms such as requesting or directing, but which probably needs a more general analytic label given the range of practices, both verbal and nonverbal, that can be employed in this domain. And within this domain, we're interested in a particular type of declarative strategy that consists of an impersonal statement that something is necessary or required. Now, in both Italian and Polish, there is actually more than one way of stating that something is necessary or required, for which reason we should rather talk about perhaps a family of impersonal forms. But there is something that all the members of this family share, and this is first a modal deontic auxiliary encoding semantic categories of necessity or obligation, and second, an impersonal subject. Now, one of the interactional consequences of using an impersonal subject is that formally none of the participants is deictically encoded as the agent of the action. Obviously, this is something different from recipient selection in turn-taking terms, which can be normally achieved through other ways, such as the use of a vocative or gaze. However, even in cases in which a single recipient is clearly selected as the next speaker, this still doesn't guarantee that the recipient would also be the performer of the action. And what we want to show you today is that the mobilization of the recipient through an impersonal deontic statement hinges on two crucial factors. First, the recipient alignment to what is being claimed, and second, the recipient's active engagement, or in other words, on the recipient's self-involvement as the agent of the necessary action. And putting these two things together, we can say that the interactional success of an impersonal model depends on the recipient identification with the project at hand, on the treatment of the necessity as a common business to be dealt with. And we would like to show you two first examples where this process runs quite smoothly, as it were, and where the recipient's verbal response, although in slightly different ways, registers the self-engagement I just took.
I only want to briefly talk you through the Polish examples. So here in this example, we have a family eating their dinner, and they are having the problem that they have two sons there, but they are not on the picture because they keep running off. The younger one, the two-year-old one, has toddled out of the room, and the older one, the eight-year-old one, who should be sitting here, he keeps running off to see what his younger brother is up to in the next room. And so the parents have this problem that they need to get him back to the table and get him to finish his meal. Okay, so Bartosz has run away again, and this is the moment where now the father, Jacek, will use this impersonal deontic. Maybe it would be necessary to get him. So this is a very straightforward one where the father says maybe it would be necessary to get him, and mom gets up and gets him. I only want to point to one feature of Ilona's responsive turn here, which shows some of what we mean when we say that the success of this kind of interaction sequence hinges upon the identification of the respondent with the claimed need. Her response, Ilona's response in line nine on your handouts, is a full clause. Right now, I'll get him.
No handouts.
Okay, good.
Minor detail.
Take some there.
Luckily enough, this case is so simple that you don't really need your handout. The thing I would just wanted to point you to is, you just need to believe me if the handout hasn't reached you yet, is that the responsive turn by Ilona is a full clause, right now I get him, rather than simply a responsive particle such as yes or okay. And by using this full clause, she heightens her agency in making this action her own, as it were.
Okay, so we'll now look at an Italian case, an Italian smooth case. So these three guys are chatting in a kitchen while Sergio, the guy in blue, is dyeing Greta's hair. And at some point, while Sergio is talking to Dino, the other guy sitting, Greta requests that Sergio takes away something, probably some hair that is hanging down on her forehead. And this is followed by a repair sequence, at the end of which we get our target, it is necessary to X sequence. And this is example two.
Sì, ripeto, io sono sempre convinto che comunque sia legato sempre a qualcosa di materiale che si vende, no? Togli, scusa. Cosa si bisogna pulire?
Okay, so now on your transcript, in line four, Greta utters her request with very soft voice, in response to which, in line six, Sergio initiates repair. And as he leans forwards to inspect what's going on Greta's hair, he immediately notices the hair that she is holding up, but also that some dye ran down, which is what is causing the hair to be stuck on the forehead. Therefore, in line nine, he produces the target deontic utterance with which he points out that it is also necessary to wipe away the dye. And in overlap with this, we get a double mobilization of his two co-participants, who both reach for a piece of kitchen paper or something. And what is important to notice here is that although it is Greta, the one who ends up cleaning her own forehead, in line 10, while he's reaching out for the kitchen paper, Dino produces a verbal response by which he volunteers to do the thing. And crucially, this kind of response doesn't do acceptance in the sense of granting, but rather registers his self-involvement into what is being taken to be a common problem. And so we see a form of active engagement very similar to what we've just seen in the Polish case. All right, so these two examples we've just seen are representative of cases in which the process leading to the fulfillment of the necessity runs smoothly. And structurally, these cases give rise to a minimal sequence type, where the impersonal construction formed by a single TCU is followed by the recipient's compliance. But coming now to the more interesting part of the phenomenon, these interactional moments actually do not always unfold like this. And instead, what we find in the majority of cases is an expanded version of the sequence, where the speaker has two main structural opportunities to address problems that may arise in the process. And the first one is the addition of further TCUs following the impersonal model one. And the second is the provision of an account after the recipient has disaligned in second position or when there's lack of uptake. And what we find speakers doing in these slots is providing reasons that articulate or support the statement they've just made. And at the same time, what is also very important for us is the exact way in which recipients disalign with their statement in the first place, and then with the reasons that are supported. And to anticipate a bit what we'll show you now, in the next two cases, we find that rather than declining or rejecting in ways that have been described in the literature and requesting, recipients did the line by disagreeing with the claim, that is, by bringing reasons that undermine it. So we'll now present two cases. The first one is an Italian one, and it's taken from the end of a family Christmas dinner. A few minutes before the beginning of the extra, Ada, this woman here, has started loading the dishwasher. But importantly, she's doing so without pre-washing the plates by hand. And the target utterance by Eva, this woman sitting at the table, addresses the matter of how plates can be properly washed even though they haven't been rinsed.
Ma senti, lo mettiamo dentro così, bisogna dare un programma molto alto, Alma, perché questo saltacca in un modo.
Sì, ma le ragazze è giusto mangiare, le arrivare a casa e casse.
La padella lì è
normale.
Ok, so now on the transcript, after some unrelated talk in the first few lines, the relevant sequence starts in line 6. Where Eva draws attention to the problem by wondering whether the plates should be put in the dishwasher just like this or not. And however, by the time she says this, Clara, Ada has clearly loaded already a number of them. And so Eva continues her turn and produces our target in personal construction. It is necessary to choose a very intense program, which provides another solution to the problem. And the crucial passage of this excerpt, we get towards the end of line 8, where Eva expands her turn by appending an account that explains why it is necessary to choose a very intense program. And the reason is that the kind of food they've eaten sticks a lot on pottery. And, well, this account might have already been planned in advance as the prosodic continuity between the two TCUs suggests, but it seems equally plausible to see it as contingently produced upon hearing the first part of Ada's very neat disalignment in line 9. And notice that Ada's turn, of course not, is not rejecting or declining, but disputing the claim of necessity that Eva has just made. And finally, what we get in response to Eva's expansion to support her claim is a counterclaim by Ada, by which she points out that although it may be true that the food sticks a lot, and that the fact is that they've just finished eating, therefore the food hasn't had the time to harden up or to take on the plates, which makes it easy to makes them easy to wash and makes pointless the choice of a very intense program.
In this Polish case, this case comes from the end of a supper. Everybody has eaten and is relaxing on the couch. And here, the dad, Henio, will start talking about a plan he has made about something he wants to do in the garden. He wants to lift up some of the grass and collect some soil and put it underneath the grass because they have some holes have developed in the lawn. And as it will turn out, his wife, Bogusha, thinks that this is not a good plan, and instead there is something else that one needs to do. This is quite a complex case, and there are different things happening in the subtitles. We have only subtitled those bits that are relevant to the sequence we are interested in, so that it will be hopefully easier to follow.
Podnieść trawę i odciąć trochę tam podnieść, wyjść na ziemię i przerzucić tam gdzieś z tyłu, bo strasznie się dobrze.
Ale w ogóle nie ma śmieszne.
Nie, bo przerzuci kamerę.
So Bogusia has rejected this plan. She has said there is nothing to lift up, but then some other stuff has happened that has to do with the daughter that is irrelevant to us here, and now she returns to her TCU in which she will now formulate this claim. It is necessary to sprinkle some additional grass.
Mm-hmm.
plastiku.
Wyrównać ziemię, po prostu i wziąć, nasiać, dosiać tego samego rodzaju trawy. Ale co ty chcesz podnosić ziemię? Przecież tam już nie ma tak dobrej trawy.
Okay, so there are lots of interesting things happening in this case, which is quite complex. But if you turn to line 19 on page 5 of your handouts, you see that this is where Kobusha presents this claim that it is necessary to simply sprinkle a lot in addition of this grass. In response to that, Hanyo disaligns with this deontic claim by saying, and so what, essentially rejecting the relevance of what Bogusha has said. And this is, we then find Bogusha starting to provide reasons. And first she self-repairs and says that is to sow some more, not to sprinkle some more, but to sow some more, because they are simply bald spots. And one final thing we want to draw your attention to is the kinds of grounds that people invoke for claiming that they know what one has to do and this other thing is not what one has to do. What Bogusha here invokes is the evidential nature of the facts of the matter. So she says there simply are bold spots. And also Henyo orients to this importance of the facts of the matter when in a bit further on in line 43, after some more back and forth, he manages to close down the discussion for now by saying, well, then we will have a look. We will go there and have a look. I will show you.
So, coming to the conclusion. So we've started by showing you cases in which the sequence initiated by the deontic statement gets a minimal structure, in that the single TCU, it is necessary to X, is sufficient to mobilize the recipient to action. But there are other cases, however, actually the majority of them, where this interchange does not run off smoothly and the sequence gets expanded. And actually these cases in which there's trouble affecting the alignment between the producer of the deontic statement and his her recipients are actually the most interesting for us, because here the underlying interactional processes come to the surface, as it were. And there's two facts in particular to pinpoint relative to this. The first one is that the way in which speakers of the impersonal deontic statement pursue their standpoint is by producing accounts that articulate or support the reasons for the necessity. At the same time, recipients do not disalign with these deontic statements in terms of willingness or ability to do what has been claimed is necessary, but instead dispute the grounds upon which the claim is based. And these behaviors on both sides expose the process of identification with the need that is crucial to the functioning of these sequences. So, to conclude, going back to where we started, in impersonal deontic sequences, two aspects emerge relative to which reasons have to be managed by participants. And these are, in the first place, the reasons for the action itself as a necessary one, and second, the reasons for which one participant should end up doing it rather than another. And in this talk, we focus mostly on the first issue and have tried to provide a first picture of how participants manage their alignment relative to why a certain action is necessary. And what we are planning to do next is to get more detailed about the issue of why this, by exploring the different grounds upon which the deontic claim is based. And in particular, by looking at what kinds of grounds recipients seem to accept, and the categories that have that are emerging so far from the data are prior agreement, by which we mean some explicit convergence that can be traced back to prior exchanges in the interaction, situational evidence, that is, states of affairs or events that can be assessed in the immediate material environment through the senses, and then shared procedure, so customs or other kinds of pre-existing knowledge about how things are done. And finally, also, we've noticed that a greater knowledge of the speaker concerning the particular task at hand can be relevant. And we hope that by comparing sequences where different types of reasons are most relevant, and especially by testing whether participants orient differently to them, we can get further insights into the intersubjective processes that underlie not only the impersonal deontic statements, but also, we hope, into the basis of everyday cooperation, more in general.
Thank you. All right, very good. Yes, Anna Lindstrom.
Thank you very much. This resonates very much with the work that I've done earlier on health visits, where there's a senior citizen, or there's a home health provider that also actually helps sort of with the kind of tasks they have to describe in here, very mundane, ordinary tasks. What's different about that data from this data is that there's a clear vision of labor there, that the role of the home health is to do these kinds of tasks. And now I don't remember the exact formats, but I think I do have some of the formats that you show, and they're treated unproblematically as requests for assistance by the home health and senior citizens through these formats. So that was one thing. The other thing was more of a question. I felt that the first two examples, maybe they're a little bit different than the last two, because the first two seem very much situated in the here and now. We have a kid going away and some disturbance going on, we have a diary that, you know, could be problematic. We're seeing the, I don't know about the third case, but I thought in the fourth case, it seemed like it was more about the future and that the dynamics could be different from those possibilities.
Yeah, so we've got data, so for the, I haven't got the numbers. But most of our cases are cases in which there's a relevance for the here and now, and those are the more directly comparable perhaps. But we have also other cases in which the relevance can be for a future action, and it can vary because sometimes this is contingently determined, and so. But so at the beginning we thought, well, we might keep only cases in which really it turns out that the people do that here and now. But it would be some sort of doesn't feel right to keep them separate right from the start. So we want to first keep them together and see what there is, what are the similarities, and then see if there are differences.
Yes.
I was wondering if you, I'm very interested by you, because the long stuff that was sent is what you're talking about, but I was wondering if you have examples of, you know, somebody saying it's necessary to X, and then there's an account, and then there's alignment, and then account. Because I have a lot of that, where it's not,
right.
It doesn't seem to be the disalignment that you know, produces the account. It sort of seems to be the normative framework itself around the proposed action, or maybe the asymmetric distribution roles and rights itself that produces the account, or that makes the account relevant. And I was thinking
in my data, I don't find but perhaps some.
So something like an it is necessary to X, and then immediately going into an account, and
yeah.
then alignment by the other person,
yeah.
and then
yeah.
not account
yeah.
by the first speaker.
Oh,
yeah.
Sorry.
So these are contexts that are much more sort of politically sensitive and politically controversial, in the sense that it's these internships where they're negotiating what are you supposed to do as part of the internship. So there's a lot of
uh-huh.
negotiation of language abilities, there's a lot of negotiations of religion and that kind of thing. So the typical example would be, you know, you kind of have to know a certain level of language in order to be able to perform the internship. And then the candidate will say yes, and then the employer will produce an account for having asked the question and kind of substantiate the X in a sense. So it's very similar format wise, but it's maybe different textually. I don't know, I think we should compare examples and maybe I think we could both move on.
Yeah, I mean formally for my data as well, that would be very unusual.
Let's try and squeeze in three questions I've seen. Soren back first.
Oh, I just wonder what distinguishes it's necessary to X from other sorts of directives. Would you say that it's a particular powerful or forceful way of phrasing a directive?
It's in general. So Jörg has done some work before this, and what we find in Polish and Italian is pretty similar. So you have quite a high percentage of failures. it is not really in terms of power of mobilization. It is not really the most forceful. But it is also qualitatively different in the sense that if you manage to get something done through this through this kind of directive, then you mobilize somebody by means of a mutual identification with some common need, and that I think it increases affiliation or convergence between disciplines. So there's a trade-off.
I think Jonathan may speak to that. He's done some work
I think I'm slightly doubtful that I want to draw necessarily to X straightforwardly a directive, although directives are a kind of class of things where the whole category may unfold. And also, with respect to disalignment, I'm not sure that it's clearly the kind of term where the next can be alignment, disalignment, given the way it's built. Its term design is specifically a kind of description of the world. So that suggests something else to me. If you think of the options after it's necessary to X, and going to do X is certainly one thing that might happen to that, but bringing up why I'm not going to do X would seem to be a much more disaligning alternative than raising questions about the grounds for the necessity of X. So in some sense, you could say out of the options, it's a kind of midway option rather than a fully disaligning option. But having said that, I'm very uncomfortable about it being anything to do with alignment or disalignment.
So you mean that, so for example, let's take the program example. How would you describe the "of course not"? Of course not in response to "it is necessary to choose a very intense program." I mean, would that be disalignment in your?
Well, disagreement. Whether it's disalignment, because it's not clear what the thing is, the action is that's being aligned with. And we're already talking in metaphorical ways when we're talking alignment or non-alignment. But exactly when you're doing a description of something that's needed, to undermine or disagree with that could be contributing towards negotiation
right,
or something
right.
going on. So
okay.
Of course there are some elements syntactically which sound a bit more assertive than might be required in the context. But I think this is, don't get me wrong, I think this is really fascinating and is absolutely profoundly central to how people manage one another and deal with things. I'm just wondering whether our language categories we're using
right.
for it are quite there yet.
Right. Now, I think we totally agree on the conceptual background. The reason why we chose disalignment was, thinking in terms of asymmetry, so if alignment in terms of the reasons of the why question, then it might be better to call it the disagreement. But
we might have to stop at that compromise position for the moment. So thanks very much for the point.